Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio Network. Tonight, we're visiting with our friends from Australia again. As many of you know, last week the show just literally blew everything up, and I hope we are on air there because I am having some trouble getting this set up. Hold on just for a second here, please. Louise, are you there?
I sure am, Marty.
Okay, yeah, I got knocked off my own show there. Thank you for hanging in there. Oh, my Lord, this is just insane. Anyway, as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted by being cut off, our show last week with the Australians just absolutely blew up the airwaves, and we've had a lot of response, a lot of interest. Many people here in the States were under the impression that the guardianship, estate theft, administrative corruption happened only here. What we are finding out is that it is happening around the globe. One of the things that was mentioned in last week's show was this global meeting, this worldwide meeting on guardianship. And I did some research on that. And I find that they've been meeting about every 2 to 4 years. You've had meetings there in Australia. We had one right here in Washington, D.C. in 2017. Nobody knew anything about. Now, in researching the group that puts this on, it is a very flowery, it's a presentation that sounds like these people are angels walking the earth, and they only want the best thing for their clients and how to take good care of them and blah, 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 blah. And it is a readout of how things should work in guardianship in a perfect world. Unfortunately, it isn't that way. And our guest now has been knocked off. I guess they don't want us talking. Hopefully she'll get called back in. One of the things that differs between what happens in Australia and what happens here, and I don't know who, okay, is that in Australia, once someone is caught in this guardianship administrative trap, the family is gagged by the tribunal, and they actually call it a tribunal there. They don't try to fool you and make you think that it might possibly be a court of law. But they are immediately gagged. They cannot speak about it. They cannot talk about it to anyone. They cannot do anything about what's going on. If they do, charges can be pressed against them. They can be put in jail. One of the ladies coming on this evening has lost her job based on false charges. They use the police. They'll kick in their doors, take their computers, their phones, lift all of their information and try to use it against them. In one instance, one lady over there had more than 600 tweets removed that she had made regarding guardianship. And this is just kind of the way this runs. It seems like over there that the police state is in full effect. Another comment that was made last week is, we have no way to defend ourselves. We have been disarmed. And I think that's our girl right there, Louise.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I know we're off to a running start, girlfriend.
This time we're calling from my phone, so hopefully that was it.
All right. Yeah, this is just, I was just talking about kind of doing a recap of last week's conversation with Chris, and I was stunned at some of the things, as bad as it is, as I was saying, Louise, as bad as it is here, it appears even worse there. You have more of a police state in place. You people actually are under the gun, literally, all the way around. And it just actually, I think it's a study in just how bad this can get. Before we get on to anything else, you want to give us a little background? What brought you on the show? How were you affected by this? Whatever you want people to know.
Okay. Well, I guess from my side, I'm speaking for both my mother and myself. Sadly, Mum is not legally able to speak at present. And the police have put a stop to that from January, and the court hearing is due May 13th. So I'm speaking from a shared perspective and how and what has been done to her and both of us collectively. I can talk about how this happened, where, and then the consequences of the social worker misconduct and fraudulent actions.
Okay. When this started, what was the catalyst for this whole ordeal starting?
Basically, they stole my grandparents.
And they did steal them, didn't they?
Yes. So it's been a very, very long, long-winded duration. And I guess at the end of the day, I can't have either of them back. It's been about 2 years now.
Yeah.
And sadly, they have passed away.
Oh, Lord. Okay. And they were, when they passed away, they were under guardianship, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and were you allowed to see them?
For my grandfather, no. He was heavily controlled by the social worker and the hospital.
Okay.
They put up multiple barriers in place to ensure that there was no contact.
Okay.
And then with my grandmother, we were lucky enough to still be able to have contact with her, although she was placed in a nursing home.
Okay, Louise, let me ask you this. With your grandfather, was this a case of the hospital actually kidnapping? I mean, the social worker instigated it, but was it a case of medical kidnap here? We have that happening here. What's happening is the hospitals now have their own attorneys on board who also act as a guardian, and that attorney will surreptitiously, usually in the middle of the night, supposedly petition the court, and I'd like to know anywhere where there's a judge awake at the middle of the night, and they will petition for emergency guardianship, and this can be because you don't agree with what they're doing, you want a second opinion, anything like that, or they want to throw them out of the hospital because the payment schedule on Medicare has expired, so they need to get them out of there, and they force them over into a nursing home. Did they do the same thing there?
They sure do. They sure do. So with all our
hello?
I'm actually a bit nervous. I've got my notes
nervous.
Here. And
Well, did they take it? Was that what happened to your grandfather? They put him under guardianship. The hospital did.
Yes. So I've got my notes here, and I can start from the beginning and share my story, and hopefully that will answer some of the questions. Is that all right?
Okay. Yes. Yes.
All
go
right.
Ahead.
Perfect. So basically this started with my grandfather being incredibly sick and the social worker with the misconduct and fraudulent actions. We had sent multiple letters to government departments, reports to ombudsmen and politicians, media in Australia, the Gold Coast Police, and Australian Association of Social Workers. We had written to everyone. There is at least 100 emails that have been sent out, if not more, asking for help and assistance into what was happening and to report the social worker for what this person was doing at the time, manipulating and lying consistently. Sorry, I keep losing my words. We reported the police for their misconduct, lies, perjury, fraudulent, vexatious criminal charges against us, and then the immediate retribution from them. This story is quite long-winded. So we received an email. This is part of my notes. So we received an email on the 11th of January inviting us to go in and discuss corruption and complaints regarding Gold Coast Police. We were excited after 2 years someone was going to meet with us and discuss our serious criminal complaint. So this was part of the over 100 emails that we had sent regarding both of my grandparents and the social worker that was involved at the time. At that point, we had been writing to everyone and not receiving one response or just a
no acknowledgement or anything.
It would be investigated. No, we would get the odd email saying that it would be investigated, and then you'd hear nothing. Nothing at all, and it would be swept underneath the rug, and that was it.
Oh, well.
So once we received that email on the 11th of January inviting us to go in, within 45 minutes of receiving this particular email from the senior sergeant at the ethical standards, detectives from the CIB here in Australia, the CIB actually immediately went to the courthouse and were granted a search warrant for our premises and our phone.
On the basis of what, Louise? On the basis of what?
We had reported their misconduct.
Their conduct. So because you reported their misconduct,
this was how
they
retaliated.
Got a search warrant for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, to find
God.
What exactly.
Okay.
That's the thing. So
okay.
Late the same night that this was a very long day. So late the same night, three detectives arrived to my grandparents' small retirement home in the retirement village where most residents would be in bed or quietly watching TV. It was, I would say, about 7, 8 o'clock at night. They arrived slamming the car doors, lights on, cameras with flashlights all operating. I heard the footsteps walk up onto our veranda, and I immediately looked at Mum, and we had a sick feeling, and I went, they're not just people visiting. It was incredibly loud and very frightening and intimidating. When they came in, they introduced themselves very briefly and said that they had a search warrant for my mother's phone and her social media passwords, Facebook and Twitter. They promised three times when questioned that they would not take data from my mother's iPhone. They would not copy her photos, emails, personal records, and they refused to allow us to accompany them. We offered to give them the password so they could leave the device. They returned 30 minutes later, and Mum was informed that she had to go to the police station where she would be interviewed with regards to stalking. And, of course, our
stalking.
First question was, each other is incredibly confused. And Mum asked whom? And who have I stalked? And apparently it was a social worker.
Oh.
The social worker had actually made a false report, which is how this came about and how they wanted a search warrant. They wanted to search the device. But if they're just searching the device, nothing coincided. So the paperwork to what they were accusing to the fact that they wanted to search the premises, none of it added up at the time. Within days and just before Mum went in for her interview, they'd actually wiped out 600-plus Twitter posts of Mum's details retaining to dementia, guardian, the social worker, aged care, corrupt police, a television interview that she had done with a current affair regarding the appalling state of nursing home care in Queensland. 600 tweets disappeared just prior to entering that police station. Yet they had said,
oh, wow.
They promised they weren't accessing anything. They just needed to just basically confirm that there was no stalking going on with regards to this social worker. Fortunately, Mum has shared all of her data with AASGAA and made downloads and saved everything.
Good.
So,
Louise, I think that is a wonderful tip to give people, a reminder to always have backup somewhere off your machines, off your, you know, instruments. Have a hard copy stored off your premises.
Multiple copies. Give them to friends.
Every place you can.
Have them all in your residence.
Yes.
So from my perspective, I think that the police and the CIB were unaware of is that I actually recorded them, and we've made several copies of this, and it's been shared for safekeeping with media associations, friends, and locked up in a safe vault. They obviously verbally agreed passwords only, and yet Mum's data before the police interview went missing. We asked them three times. I asked them three times. They agreed to not touch Mum's data or personal information. So why do they need to take her whole iPhone and copy the whole device? That's what I couldn't quite work out. So I'm glad that I did record them. And
well, they were hoping, Louise, to get information they could use against her. They were trying to find evidence. Actually, that
exactly.
was an illegal search. It was an illegal search because she consented to give them her password, but she did not consent to them rifling through her information and taking any of it.
That's
exactly what they were doing. Yeah.
That's exactly what they were doing. And in the recording, they do say three or four times that they're just copying the Twitter. They just need to find some tweets about the social worker. That was it. So there's no mention of, and they try and scare you. They say, oh, this is fully recorded, and they've got the cameras flashing and blocking the front door so no one can leave. They tell you you've been detained. Like, it's just ridiculous. And that's when I just thought, well, I'm going to switch my phone on, and I'm going to record you because you haven't mentioned anything to me about any of this. So when they did say that they were taking the actual device itself, and I thought, well, you're either not very bright that social media is an app, and you don't require the details of a phone, or you are sort of stitching yourself up. So that one's still ongoing.
Yes.
Yeah. So
if you can tell me a little bit about this social worker you keep talking about.
The devious mastermind behind multiple families losing their family members and their sanity, their dignity, humiliation, and charges that come about and get dropped, and constant tribunal hearings and lies, fraudulent statements.
Okay. And you actually have a tribunal there, an open tribunal now here. They call it probate court, but it is not a court of law. It is a statutory construct, and it is a tribunal by definition. And the person sitting on that bench, and there is only one person here, there isn't several members, there's only one person who masquerades as a judge. They are not. They're a hearing examiner or a ministerial clerk. They work for the same agencies, like the social worker works for that are coming against you, and they draw their paycheck from them. And this is in most cases. There's a few exceptions to this here and there, but not many. And that person is not bound by the law. They're bound by statute, but they can interpret those statutes any way they want to, and they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing the same thing that happens here. You get drug in front of these people, and you have no defense because whatever's going down was decided before you ever walked in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah. The social worker you're talking about, she's pivotal in many of these cases. She's the one that started the action to begin with, and she does this routinely.
She starts everything. Everything. I mean, we are still fighting Mum's false vexatious criminal charges that are orchestrated by her once again, and her close friends and family that work in the Criminal Investigations Bureau, where, like, maybe they should do their job and investigate the social worker who has hundreds of victims she has unlawfully signed over to guardians and public trustees. I mean, we're fearful and terrified. We're terrified of her, and we're terrified of the CIB.
Louise, when you say she signs them over, what does that mean? Because here have to petition the court. Yeah.
No, so she can just have them sign a document, and they're handed over to the adult guardians and public trustees. There is no
good God.
There's no word in it. It's
okay. And she has them sign on the basis of what? Like here, they always try to say it used to be incompetent. Everybody was incompetent, and they were all bipolar. Just killed me. Everybody was bipolar.
Wow.
You know, and now it's I'm serious. And then when we challenged that numerous times, how fraudulent this was, because even in one instance, we had in some court documents, we got a letter written by a psychiatrist who said, so-and-so told me, the nurse told me, and somebody else told me that the person acted this way and that way, and that indicates to me they're bipolar. And then it said, if this doesn't work for you, let me know and I'll write you something else up. And this is what goes on. But now they call it incapacitated. And Louise, it's incapacitated, which can mean anything. You've got a cold, you stubbed your toe, you have a headache. So now they can just on this for you, and they don't need any evidence. They don't need any proof of what they're saying is true. They said it, so mm-hmm. That's the law. So, and it's pretty much that way there. Yeah,
so one of the consistencies that we've seen throughout the multiple cases that have happened or are currently happening is that the word loss of capacity is
yes.
quite frequent. There's no mm-hmm. test done. There's no investigation into whether this person has actually lost capacity, whether or not
exactly.
they need to have everything signed over from their families. They've got families who love them and look after them, and this person goes in and goes, no, they've lost capacity. They can't look after themselves
yep.
anymore. They need to go to this nursing home. Guardians can take over, and the public trustees can handle their entire estate.
Exactly.
And it can all be done within 48 hours.
You're slow, because we can go way faster than that over here. hang on, Louise. We've got a caller on. Did you have a question or comment? Hello?
Hello.
Area code 614? Yes. Did you
Hello,
have a question
Maddie.
Or comment? Yes.
Oh. Hi. Can you hear me? It's Chris from Australia.
Yes, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, Chris. It's Louise here. Hi. How are you, Louise?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I hope you're all well. And say hello to everyone for me on the other side of the state. So I'm in Victoria and Louise is in Queensland. So we talk frequently. Louise has raised some great questions, but Louise, just explain how the social worker, guardian, trustee network works and how families are isolated in Australia once these particular individuals step in, and how easy it is to lose your human rights under these circumstances in Australia, and how we're silenced once they've captured our loved ones or ourselves?
They get two for the price of one. So, when I say two for the price of one, so we've got a few people listening in here. When they took my pop, they also got my nano. They had him sign her over as well.
They had him sign her over?
That's
and how
correct.
Did they do
so this? They took advantage of his capacity situation, his lack of capacity, and they had him sign the document that would sign his wife over at the same time that he was signing himself over. And again, this all comes back to the social worker.
How can you do that? You can't sign. How can you? I don't
well,
understand.
Actually,
why would this be acceptable?
The head nurse.
I don't care if Jesus Christ witnessed it. That was somebody else's rights and life, whether you're married to them or not. This social worker's got to be a psychopath. This is absolutely disgusting. How you can sign somebody else over?
Well, she had another victim in the same hallway at the exact same time this was all happening with my pop. Exactly the same situation. False allegations, lies, isolation, banned from the hospital, friends and family couldn't visit. What she does is she manipulates them and makes sure that they're by themselves so they don't have any access to anyone else. So they have no contact via phone. They have no visitors coming in. No family can get there. Everyone's banned. No one's allowed access. I actually taped my pop on numerous occasions. Via the phone calls that I did get in. I've actually got a phone call where she takes the phone and she hangs up. And she's like, he can't talk right now, and hangs up. I'm like, well, my pop does have a voice if he's up. He was quite happy having the conversation. So that just shows the extent that she will go at. She has no boundaries.
What's her name? Can we say her name?
No.
Okay. We'll just call her Cousinette.
A social worker based on the Gold Coast here in Queensland, and a relative of the police also here, the local police, law enforcement. So there's no name to be mentioned, but this person is incredibly lethal, and I'm sure there are people listening in that know exactly who I'm referring to.
Yeah.
I'm actually almost afraid that I'll get a... Sorry?
I'm sure that there's a lot of people that are queuing up on this know exactly who this person is. People like this don't run without establishing a reputation for their evil acts. And don't you wonder how she walks around in public knowing that people know she's a predator? I mean, don't you... How do you walk around in public when your reputation is based on preying on other human beings for profit? I don't understand that.
It's not public. She does such a good job on wiping it under a rug that no one hears about it, that she's actually a guest speaker and can also be referred to as an advocate for elder abuse when she is a perpetrator.
No way.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
She is an incredibly lethal person who has no boundaries. I mean, I'm even afraid that there'll be a knock at my door this evening should someone be listening in that will accuse me of God. Who knows what? Especially the CIB. So that's how
what is the CIB?
She is. So it's the Criminal Investigation
CIB?
Bureau.
Okay.
So that's our...
Well, I don't think you're the one that needs to be investigated, personally. Gee, many Christmas.
So it costs thousands of dollars where we are now. to defend ourselves over and over again, and fight for Nana and fight for Pop. It's been an incredibly emotional and physically exhausting journey that we have been through, and a lot of it, I'd say 99% of it is because of her. A lot of it could have been avoided had she not existed.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have even existed if she wasn't around.
Oh, wow.
Like, we've actually seen it. Nan and Pop had 20 years in another private hospital on the Gold Coast, and no problems at all. They knew our whole family. I know a lot of the nurses there personally. They see me and they hug me and they say, "Oh my goodness, I've known you since you were four." We changed hospitals, and that was the biggest mistake we could have ever made.
Oh, wow. How many people at Queensland Hospital, do you have any idea how many people they've subjected this to?
Hundreds. Hundreds.
Oh, my
and
God.
Hundreds.
Too many Christmas. See, we have that going on here. You're literally taking your life in your hands if you go in the hospital here, especially if you're a senior citizen. The likelihood of you coming out of there either in a body bag or guardianized is highly unlikely. You've usually just got those two options. The medical kidnap here is just... Go ahead. What?
It's the same now, Marty. Pop was in there for 4 months. 4 months. There was no brain scan done. There was no test whether or not he had capacity or lost capacity. I mean, the documents that were signed, it was almost prior to when he passed away, and he started to have all the drugs removed from him. So he was, everything was shutting down.
Oh,
they
wow.
had new wills done. And when I say they, I refer to you as her.
Oh, wow. Wow. They're doing what they're doing here. We have hospice, and I had talked to Chris about this last week. Hospice here used to be the Good Samaritan. They were people who came in if you were terminally ill. They would break the family so they could get away for a bit. They would come in and just talk. They would help with home care. They were just angels of mercy. Under Obamacare that got passed in 2010, they got an $11.5 billion infusion of cash to go from Good Samaritan to the Grim Reaper. Now if you go into hospice, the first thing they will do, unless you're just in there temporarily, you can be in there for 30 days and get sent home, that's okay. But if you go in there and a doctor says that you have a terminal illness, you have 6 months or less to live, how they know that, I just do not know. Hospice immediately removes food and hydration, and they begin starving and dehydrating the patient, and they begin drugging them all at the same time with these horrendous drugs, these psychotropic drugs. Well, within 4 days, they're basically in a coma-like state. And the organs are shutting down due to lack of water. You can go 2 weeks without food and probably survive it, but you can only go a few days without with water affecting you. And so this is what they do, and they create the conditions required to call for futility of care. And once a doctor calls futility of care, now they stop any and all treatment that might prolong your life, treat your illness, help you to recover, anything else. Futility of care means that your time's up. And now they move to palliative care, which is actually stealth euthanasia. They start the drugging in earnest. And within a very short time, you're gone. And we're seeing hospitals doing this now, too, not just hospice. But and then to hear you talking about what they're doing to your grandfather, what they did to your grandfather, sounds very much the same thing.
Well,
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Uh, we we had actually tried to have him moved into hospice. We had already spoken to them. He was happy. He just did not want to pass away in that hospital.
Right.
The social worker put a stop to all of that. It was absolutely horrendous. He actually passed away by himself in a tiny little room in the non-renovated part of the hospital, which is considered like a basement. It's absolutely horrendous. And,
oh, my God.
They left him there to die. They knew exactly what they were doing. Easy. He's by himself.
Yeah.
He's hidden. No one can get access. You'd have to walk so far just to get to his room. It wasn't like you would walk through the door, turn left, and he'd be right there. They made it an absolute maze to get all the way down there, and you'd have to walk past the nurse's station. So he really was isolated and segregated into this small room that you couldn't get to. I mean, so I had, just prior to him passing, I'd spoken to him on the phone, and he was crying and saying he was so sorry for everything that happened and that the big mess that had been created and the social worker had been standing over him and that I needed to come in and see him. It was going to be my birthday. My birthday was only the next day. And he was so, so very sick, and he told me he'd been resuscitated several times in the last couple of weeks and that he was critically ill. And he was only alive because of copious amounts of blood and drugs that were being pumped into him to keep his heart and kidneys and liver still functioning. He never wanted to end his life like this. I mean, he had signed a do not resuscitate multiple times that he was to not be pumped into him with drugs and copious amounts of blood and hanging in there like a vegetable stuck in bed all day. That's not what he lived for. He was a very active man that loved his life and loved his family. He lived with us for a long time as well. We had a beautiful property, and everybody loved him. Everybody. So Nan and Pop lived with us for quite a while, and Pop was always known as the morning tea man that would bring everyone treats and everything. He was a father figure to me. My father's not around, so he filled that void and filled that gap and did an incredible job. He came to everything. Like Pony Club, he came to watch me ride. I ride horses. He regularly picked me up from school, all those sorts of things. Like, I was known as his pal. He called me his pal, and I was his best friend. when he passed away, it was like losing my father and my grandfather in one, and I couldn't be there because I was told that I wasn't allowed, that I was banned from the hospital. And after having someone there my whole entire life, every step of the way, it was the most earth-shattering moment. To this day, I'm just devastated. I lost someone that was so close to me, and I couldn't do a damn thing about it.
I'm sorry. We have another caller here I'm going to bring on real quick. You're coming in as a blank call. Did you have a question or a comment for Louise?
Am I on air or not?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Regarding, ringing from Australia. The issues, I agree with what Chris has been saying. I looked at a movie last night, The Panama Papers, and there's an investigative journalist group, ICIJ, is that where we should be going? I've been trying for 15 years in Australia and getting nowhere because the system is so corrupt. And my story is one of the many where my mother had her rights and liberties prematurely taken from her and incarcerated before her time. That was the words of the lawyer in the appeal court after the tribunal decision. The tribunal ignored, violated those orders of the court and denied my mother her rights, liberties, and being able to be removed from incarceration for the rest of her life, which was over 10 years. I think it's appalling. The system is so corrupt. I have provided documents to the government, provided it to Parliament just recently. They are turning a blind eye to the abuse, and some of that abuse is easily identified, financial abuse, with systems in South Australia's public trustee that have been failing to provide accurate records for over a decade. They knew about it in 2004. In 2014, it's still happening. How many estates have been defaulted on at settlement? They know there's been a lot. The cost to actually audit those estates and actually do something about it would likely bankrupt the state government. So what do? They bury it. And that is appalling.
Right.
That it's not just the people. I think what we need to recognise with this is that when people are abused financially or whatever, there's a social aspect, and the psychological is the area that I was most concerned with. My mother had capacity. She knew what was happening through her, and no one could help her. That is appalling. And in a court, I said once that in my appellant application that I could feel my mother's pain, and the Crown solicitor in that court made a joke of he says he can feel her pain. Well, if you've lived with the pain of a loved one going through that, you feel their pain. But what the system is doing, it's not just abusing the few people or the hundreds or thousands of people around Australia. It's not just those people. It's generations to come. When they deplete an estate of their assets, it affects the children of those and the generations to come. And I have a story that was given to me, and a father came to me and said, what can you do to help? My son and his family are being evicted from their house. I'm not a lawyer. I said, well, this is what the system does and this is what happens. I said, why are they being evicted? And he said, well, his son got a settlement from an accident of around, I think it was $900,000, 7 to 10 years earlier, and public trustee were put in to manage that money. Now, after that period of time, public trustee was selling his house worth $200,000 to recover $75,000 owed assets. Now, I said, well, what happened to the investment, et cetera, of that $900,000? Because that's all he had left, and he was going to be, him and his family were going to be turfed out in the street. Now, that affects that family, that affects the kids and the generations to come. I think the government has, the government is profiting by this, particularly state governments, because the profits from the public trustee go into state revenue. And they're quite happy overcharging or doubling charges for people or having systems that don't provide accurate records when it might benefit them. And, for example, the South Australian trustee has its own common funds, which are investment funds where they put clients' money into. $1 billion they have in that. Now, they combine that with the state's own money in the one little pot, but they control when that money is invested, diverse from one investment to another. They don't. I try to get the unit prices of transactions that were occurring, so I could see whether the transactions were occurring in the best time, best interest of the client or for the public trustee or the government. Now, they said under freedom of information, they do not keep daily unit prices. If that is the case, then how can any audit ever be done on a client's estate? And regarding audits, the public trustee charged their clients $160-something a year for an audit. They have admitted they do not audit. So it's a fee for no service. Everybody turns a blind eye to this. If you've got 4,000, 8,000 clients and you're charging $100-something for something that does not exist, that's bad enough. But the system is that no one actually audits the individual client's estate. So they can do whatever they want in those. And when it comes that person dies, then if they're the executors of the estate particularly, they can then just say to the beneficiaries, here's your lump sum. They don't have to tell them how it was calculated. All their errors then go into what in South Australia is state records for 60 years protected. You can't get access to those administration files for 60 years. While it is active...
Yes, 100%. In Queensland, $70,000 was removed from my Pop's bank account, which was a shared bank account between Nan and Pop. And it was gone within 48 hours. And that was just before he passed away. He hadn't even left this earth yet. We wrote to the Attorney General. That money's never going to be seen.
The Attorney Generals know what's going on here. The State Attorney Generals are accountable for the public trustees in the state. If you go to the federal government, they say, we can't intervene in state matters. If you go to... my mother was in one state being abused from a public trustee in another state. The state she lived in said, we can't intervene in state in the other state matters. Our powers end at the border. I don't know whether that's the same in America, but
we wrote
it
to
is appalling.
She's the Attorney General and for Queensland, and nothing. No response, nothing.
Wrote See, it's the same here. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I've got dozens
That's
of
right,
statements from the Attorney General saying, thank you for your letter, we'll respond we'll respond to you. They never do. It's they know what's going on. They're burying it. They're profiting by it. That is appalling. And they're abusing the most vulnerable people in Australia and the rest of the world. That's why I wonder whether this ICIJ group, the Panama-type group of journalists, would be interested in looking at this, because the story is there. If it is worldwide, the story is there, and it needs such a group to look at the overall picture and expose it so something is actually done to protect these people, because individually we can't do anything, unfortunately.
Well, you're correct about that. And it is being done the same way here. It's called jurisdiction, and they claim they have no jurisdiction. And if you go to the court they claim has jurisdiction or should have jurisdiction, they don't have any jurisdiction either. And if you try to get to the Supreme Court, that's a joke. They have the probate exception doctrine. And here, this whole system is called probate. And and under probate is supposed to become active here only upon presentation of a death certificate. And then the only job of probate is to determine whether there's a will, testate, or intestate, no will. And at that point, that hearing examiner is simply supposed to make sure that the provisions of the will are met, and those that are supposed to inherit do. And instead, they bring the live person, actually just in name most times, the person, even though they're supposed to get due process, are seldom even notified the hearing is taking place. And what happens is the guardianship petition becomes the de facto death certificate, because once you are made a ward of the state here, you have suffered a civil death, meaning you are dead in the law. You have no rights. You have no protections. You cannot speak. You can't do anything. And from there, it's just one big money rodeo. The same thing here. The audits that are supposed to happen... rarely do. And the money flies out the door faster than you can open and close it. And there's no accounting for what happened to personal possessions. It might have been a value. Property gets transferred, sold, flipped. It is one of the worst systems I have ever seen. And we're up against the same thing here. We've got representatives, senators, both state and federal, who have been, we have contacted, been in contact with, have talked to, met with, and absolutely nothing changes. But a friend of mine pointed something out to me about this that I hadn't considered. and that was the economics of it. You talk about how this money goes back to the state, goes into these big slush funds, and that is a matter of economics. If you take that away, if you stop this system and you stop, and you know this is in the millions and millions of dollars every year in this estate theft, in the theft of land.
Billions of dollars. We're past the millions here in Australia.
Yeah, so yeah, if you took this away, if you took that access away to all that money, the state would go broke.
That's right. And the federal government would have to put more into it.
Yes.
Yeah, the federal government supports it because...
Yeah. Go ahead.
They say they take away, the person becomes a protected person when the states take over their rights and liberties, but they fail to afford proper protection to those people. Instead, they abuse them. And it's criminal. It's terrible. And you talked about the courts and how can a, what's the point of an appeal court when the appeal court's decision doesn't have to be acted on, and when the tribunal that the appeal goes to can ignore all the orders of those courts, which it did, and when it was asked why it didn't, it said it doesn't care. And then the court said they can make the order, but they can't force them of their own volition. What's the point of it? It's just a facade.
Yeah. Yes.
When I wrote to the Legal Services Commission, they found historical data that came up that could actually incriminate and shut the social worker down and begin an investigation into several suspect cases where this has started, formed, and ended. They didn't do anything at all, and I don't believe they had any intentions of doing so once they dug that up and then they started to realize what they were about to bring themselves into and start to investigate. They quickly shut that down and never mentioned it again because it was so intertwined with the police and QCAT and social worker and tribunal hearings and just such a mess. And also, it's a billion-dollar industry. They took the house. We had to fight to have that back. We had to fight to have Nana back. My Nana was actually adopted. And we refused, and she had said and expressed numerous times that she was not going to pass away a ward of the state, as she had already been adopted, and she already was a ward of the state when she was born. So we promised her, and we fought like hell, thousands and thousands of dollars. We had to go back twice. Again and again, there was a disgruntled family member that got involved that just came out of the woodworks out of nowhere after 20 years, didn't even know what that person looked like. And $30,000 later, we got Nana and we got the house. But
the whole system is circular. It takes you around in a circle so that people can extract the money from you or the whatever else. The lawyers make their money. Eventually people give up. That's what they expect to happen. And just to show what I won't keep you any longer, but to show what happened just recently, I was asked by Parliament in South Australia to provide questions to Public Trustee. I provided 17 questions to Public Trustee. Parliament asked those questions of Public Trustee. Public Trustee misled, deceived, deflected and lied to Parliament. So I then ask why is it appropriate that a government office can lie to the government. No one will answer that. I then went to the responses from Public Trustee and provided a document 280 pages long, which provided within it the documents of the government's own demonstrating they were lying to it. So what did the government parliament inquiry do? It says, oh, we're not going to look at it any further. That's it. So that's
ago. 1,600 cars. It's $2.7 billion in Queensland alone. I mean, 3,000 homes and 1,800 cars. That is insane. It's not their property. They're not entitled to it. I mean,
yeah,
they left out a little house with blood on the floor and urine and bottles in the sink. I mean, the house had been locked up. There was old food in the pantry. There was cockroaches. It was disgusting. And they had simply closed the door, locked it, walked away and gone, oh, well. And Nana wasn't allowed anything. She wasn't allowed her clothes. She wasn't allowed her underwear. She wasn't allowed her slippers. She wasn't allowed anything. I had to go and buy her all new everything. For 12 months, she didn't have access to one single thing. She didn't have her photos. She had said, she's like, oh, I would really like that photo album. And I had to keep saying, I'm so sorry. I can't go and get that for you. I can't go into the house. The house is locked. By the time we got in here, we actually were nearly sick upon opening the door. It was absolutely disgraceful. Your stomach would have churned. The smell, it was just horrendous. And their little care, I mean, the neighbors were the ones that were looking after the garden, still bless them. They were trying to keep the garden alive because that was Pop's first and foremost love. But the house inside was just dreadful. And they charge monthly fees for maintaining the property. I'm sorry, what maintenance were you doing exactly? Because you had just left it, locked it, that was that, and were starting to take money from the estate.
Yeah,
like
the psychological
the house
abuse.
$100,000 in value.
$100,000. Yeah, the psychological abuse you were talking about, particularly the photos, rings a bell here, because my mother was denied her family photos and memories for 6 years. It took me 6 years of trying. Eventually, I got them. But in that time, she was so stressed that she didn't have these things, love things, you know, ornaments and photos in particular. It took the other state to intervene to get South Australia to give them back to her. Now, in the meanwhile, South Australia, when public trustee were involved, they were charging her storage fees for her belongings. They valued them at $2,000.
Exactly.
And they charged twice the amount of the value of the things to deny them to her. That this is just the whole system is just money making abuse.
It's not even one at a time. The fees are one at a time.
Go ahead.
I've said probably as much as I need to at this stage. I'm quite happy to speak again. But I just thought I'd raise up that ICIJ, whether someone can do something from America or somewhere, that we need investigative journalists that are willing to look into this. But all the evidence is there. There's plenty of evidence. It's a matter of like the Panama papers, to get them all together and look at the common factors and what is happening and the links that are occurring. And identify it to the public so they recognise that these public trustees, the trust in that name does not apply. And something has to be done. The federal government has to be forced to act on these states. And, okay, then they'll have to give more money to the states to top up what they're stealing from their citizens, but so be it. But as I said, thank you, guys, and I just thought I'd bring that in, and thank you, America, for your help. Australia, it's a waste of time. It's all the media shut down. Everything's being shut down because too many vested interests and too many conflicts of interest in the legal justice system for things
not
to happen.
Yes.
Don't
lose hope.
Okay. Thank you very much, and I'll leave you now then. Catch you. Bye.
It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that was, you know, and he brought up so many things there about how this works. Like I say, my friend mentioned the economics, something I had not actually considered before, Louise. And when you look at it, and as he was talking about, everybody's making money. The attorneys you hired to try to defend yourself from these bogus charges, the courts are making money. The guardians, the trustees, the hospitals, the doctors, everybody's making money off this one target. and they're making money off of you trying to save your relative, your grandfather, your grandma.
Can I ask you something?
The legal system over there, your laws over there, are they written like they are here with all this arcane, idiotic, old Latin, all these idiotic terms instead of using plain English? You know, that's part of the smoke and mirrors of the law profession.
Charge is a misuse of a carriage service. I mean, to menace and harass. Are they joking? That's a 100-year-old charge that just comes out of the woodwork just like that.
Exactly.
And I mean, that was the social worker. The social worker.
Right.
Everything always comes back to this one particular person. I mean, Nan and Pop, they were married for 55 years. Nana didn't get to say goodbye to her husband after 55 years of marriage. And that's the social worker. I hope she doesn't sleep at night. I really do hope she doesn't sleep at night, because it's the most despicable, and she's a disgusting human being that has been able to get away with so much. Nana used to say all the time, she's like, oh, are your grandfather and I, is Pop and I, are we going to go into a home together? Are we going to live peacefully together and spend the rest of our lives and be buried together? And I would always say, look, Nana, we're trying. You know, I couldn't tell her we're upwards of $60,000 in law fees, and we're getting nowhere. We're doing circles because of this one evil person. The social worker even tried to bury my grandfather. Tried to organize his funeral and to have him buried at, I can't even remember exactly where that was, but a Lambie Gardens. That's right. She was trying to organize to have him buried there, and I nearly lost the complete plot. Their wills have always been consistent in showing that they are going to be buried together, and they're going to be buried in a place called Springvale in Victoria, where Pop's parents are. Now, Pop wrote a letter that specified that they're to go together and that he will wait for her. Now, he passed away. We don't have his ashes. His ashes are being held ransom, as far as I'm concerned, by a family member that wasn't here for 20 years. Never saw him. Not a Father's Day card, not a Christmas card, not a birthday card, not an Easter card, nothing. And I've got my beautiful Nana here in the sideboard waiting. And my end goal is to join them together and have them buried together. But it is so hard after what the public trustees have done to us and the manipulation. I mean, how am I supposed to get my Pop back at this stage when the authorities don't listen? No one listens. They don't listen to a will. They don't listen to anything that's on papers. They don't care. They have taken over $100,000 from the joint account now. I mean, when they did that, did they completely forget that my Nana existed? They left her with nothing. They locked her out of her house. They wiped the accounts. She had no belongings. She had nothing, and she was living with us. And I'm like, she's still a person. She still exists.
Yeah.
She does need to eat and have everything. And they, as far as they were concerned, the estate's theirs, the house is theirs, all the belongings. They said they would pack up everything in the house and it would go to one of their storage sheds, and then they, upon the passing of the relative, so my grandfather, they then sell everything off that was put into those storage boxes. I mean, that was photo albums, my christening dress, paintings that I painted them. Nana had asked me for a favorite teddy bear just to have, and I couldn't even go and get that for her. I had to go and buy a new one, and she's like, oh, well, this isn't the one from, I'm like, well, I can't go in there. And she just kept saying, she's like, I don't understand, though. Did they forget about me? Did they forget that I'm alive? Did they forget about me? And I would sit there and I could never, I can never understand. I mean, there's been so many tears and so many long nights that we've sat with her, and we would, you know, my her little small dog would sit next to her, and he would lick her hand, and she would sob ever so quietly, and just say that she doesn't understand how she's lost her house and she's lost everything and she's lost her husband. She just couldn't understand that someone could swoop in and take everything out from underneath her. And this, the perpetrators that caused all of this come down to the social worker, a horrendous family member that just swooped in out of nowhere and had new documents signed and witnessed by the social worker and the head nurse. New wills. I mean, there's two new wills, and there was one that was done 2 days prior to his death. So, I mean, he 2 days prior to his death sounds like he was taking off all of his meds, and he was critically ill. I mean, he was critically ill for weeks. So it's definitely questionable how those new wills came apart.
Right.
His signature, even on the will, is a squiggle. I know exactly how my pop has signed his signature. I know exactly, it's been consistent throughout the years. I mean, all the birthday cards, I can match up all the handwriting and the handwriting on the will. To me, that's not his signature. That is a very critically ill man that has signed over everything to them. I mean, we had a horrendous fight getting Nana back. And I look at all the signatures and the paperwork, and it's very questionable. And as far as I'm concerned, I didn't think that a head nurse could witness any documents. Out of a hospital.
Right.
I thought that was legal.
Do you know, Louise, one of the bad things I heard over the years was out of Germany here about 5 or 6 years ago, and I had people contact me from Germany, and they said that the elderly over there, Merkel had said, were costing the German economy. And here we're talking this economy again. They were costing the economy too much, and it wasn't fair to all the younger Germans. So they were boxing up the elderly, supposedly, and sending them to Southeast Asia to nursing homes there where it was less expensive to care for them. I don't know how you accomplished that. But the family said that once this happened, they claimed it happened 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah, 2 to 3 weeks before the family was even notified, and then the family was told they could have no contact and couldn't know their exact location. And we all, in a conference call one evening, there were four families and myself, concluded that most likely what had happened is they had murdered these people and gotten rid of the evidence and then just claimed it, because there's never been any evidence, to my knowledge, ever produced that these people were ever taken anywhere. You can't find any transport information. You can't find any receiving information. You can't find anything. That tells me there most likely wasn't a trip. But Christine has joined us again. Chris, what's up?
Hello, Marty. Hi, Louise. Again, sorry about this. You touched on a few points that are very, very relevant. And I think what we're trying to, apart from portray that there's a very big problem in Australia regarding guardianship and I would call racketeering and kidnapping and eventual death of our most vulnerable. But what we're seeing is, and Louise touched this and so did Chris, once a trigger is initiated, so a fall or an illness or a report of some sort, we see in Australia this hospital / social worker / lawyer intervention model somehow kick in. And it seems from all the reports that I've been able to gather and many others, it seems that what the main point is, or the power is to disempower the families first in any which way possible, to grab the body and to grab the mind. And what they're doing here is, and I think this needs to be pointed out quite clearly, is the minute you're in hospital, I mean, you could be unconscious. You could be lying there. A pen is put in your hand, physically can be put in your hand, and you could sign away your... And no one witnesses this, just a social worker and a doctor that's connected to this hospital, usually not qualified to assess the illnesses that they're signing off on. And that social worker slash doctor has practically taken your nan, your pop, and that's what happened to Louise. And the once they've targeted you and taken over, then the family has to fight back. And that is near impossible because the state virtually takes over. When we're talking about money, what money this generates, apart from jobs, and we're talking jobs in palliative care, the hospital, social workers, carers, aged care, lawyers, government, financial planners, accountants, storage, providers, aged care providers, hospice providers, you name it, it goes on and on. When you take over that particular individual, that's only one piece of real estate. Could be worth $500,000, could be worth $200,000. But that's then all carved up amongst these various groups. So you see the state through takes over these affairs and then puts them in their limited company, which is not, I mean, I haven't seen any audits on this. And as Chris touched on previously, basically the unit pricing is not there and very difficult to audit. So what happens is management fees start tacking on, legal fees, probate fees, capital entry fees, exit fees, ringing up apparently, you know, and so on and so on. And they charge. Now, there's also stamp duty. They need to sell the property. That stamp duty feeds back to the state government. The federal government in Australia also gains by capital gains tax on a lot of this investment. Then you have banks that gain who invest this money and so on and so forth. So that piece of property that would have been inherited and passed down generation to generation, which would have has been lost, and this is a generational holocaust, and that's what we call it. And basically that money is then distributed. And I'm seeing a very strong link between this social worker slash intervention model. And that, and Louise and her family have been a prime victim of this because it seems to be perpetrated particularly in Queensland, and we're seeing a lot of this in Queensland. We have another lady that told us her mother, her 93-year-old mother, was signed up. She was practically blind, and she was signed up to the state, and that was here in Victoria. There was another lady in New South Wales, social worker again. This social worker model is really popping up in Australia. And this particular lady was actually no children at all. She had a fall, ends up in hospital. Okay, the social worker has decided she should go into care. She should go into care, and this woman said no. She was 93, but she was a sprightly 93-year-old, and she called her cousin. They arranged a hearing. They did not notify anyone in the family. Okay, and the hearing was, I think, within an hour that the cousin was notified. They threw paperwork in front of this woman. She managed to tell her cousin over the phone. They threw paperwork in front of her. The social worker told her to sign over her estate to the state government. She refused. She committed suicide. She jumped off the balcony and committed suicide. She preferred to die than sign over paperwork. Now, that family is currently suing or considering suing the state government. I mean, these are horrible stories. And there's always a social worker slash hospital slash lawyer involved in this. And we're seeing this come up time and time again. We have a gentleman in Poland. He managed to escape. His name's Joseph. He had a fall. He served in the war. He had a fall. He lived in Australia. He's in his, I think, his 80s or 90s. He had a fall, ends up in hospital. Again, a social worker deems him unfit to live at home. They place him in hospice. And this poor gentleman, and he was fortunate because a lovely lady by the name of Melanie Abatouche, her partner, happened to meet Joseph and somehow got him out of the nursing home. He escaped to Poland. He's not coming back, Marty. He's not stepping foot in Australia. Yep. The Polish government have welcomed him with open arms. He is a protected citizen, and it seems the guardians here are chasing him. They're trying to bring him back. And this is in effect a kidnapping, and we see it time and time again. And we see once a trigger kicks in of some sort, that's it.
And can I add something? So yes. The respiratory doctor was the one that signed the letter saying that Pop had no capacity. Respiratory.
Mm. And that's common.
That's not a neurologist. that's not an expert on whether or not a patient has dementia or Alzheimer's or has lost capacity. Respiratory, really? Signing across saying that he had lost capacity. I mean, he'd called and told me on that same day saying that, don't worry about the Hugh and Pine chairs. Throw them over your shoulder. Don't worry about the Hugh and Pine chairs. And I had to go and ask Mom, I'm going, what on earth is Hugh and Pine? And what chairs is he talking about? And then I had the social worker on the phone. And then she's telling me, oh, he doesn't want you to worry about the Hugh and Pine chairs. I'm going, I don't understand what that is. Oh, well, that was my message for you. And then hangs up the phone.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
He didn't have capacity.
Often, and one thing we're seeing often, and I'm sure this is happening in America as well, doctors that are not qualified to assess dementia often sign off in regards to capacity. It must be noted only a neurologist and a psychiatrist can sign off on that issue alone. Everyone else is offering an opinion, and they do this often. We have a case of another lady, an OT specialist, over the phone determined capacity. I mean, she was so lazy, she couldn't even get out of her chair. And she decided that this particular person did not have capacity over the phone. Now, she didn't care because who's going to stop her? Who's going to raise the concerns? Once we raise these concerns, no one cares in Australia. We're stuck. We are captured here. And it's more or less an SOS call. Now, in Louise's case, okay, members of her family desperately on Twitter and various other social media attempted to bring this issue to light, attempted to draw this issue to the Attorney General's. They're not listening. They're not listening to Louise. They're not listening to her family. They're not listening to the two Nana and Pop that passed away. Okay, and now, you know, people are facing charges in this country for speaking out about crimes.
Yes.
We are victims. We are victims of I call it the silent Holocaust. And it's silent because the victim dies. The victim dies and their story goes with them. This is not about children that are abused, that grow up and write a book and then say, this is my story, and then they are prosecuted down the line. No. What they do is they destroy the reputation of the family. They'll find anyone in the family to bag that particular person or to discredit that individual, and that's what they do. And then they say, oh, but that person wasn't liked, or that person did this. They don't look at their actions. And it's the old Joseph Goebbels line, accuse your enemies of that which you are guilty of. And that's what they did to Louise, and that's what they did to her family, and that's what they're doing to all of us. But we've had enough as Australians. We are speaking out. We are going to speak out. We are going to tell our stories. We are forming a guardianship meet in Queensland on the 21st. We are going to speak up about these abusers. I'm flying to the United States. I'm going to make sure that this is brought out in public, and we are not going to be silent anymore, because this is just terrible what people are facing. Families, generations after generations, and we need to tell our stories. And we need to expose those government officials, those social workers, those guardians and trustees who are actually causing this harm and abuse. They need to be outed.
Well, I agree with you. You know, Chris, when you were on last week, you talked about a worldwide meeting of guardians that had taken place in Australia. Well, I did some research, and it turns out that there is a worldwide association of guardians, and they meet about every 2 to 4 years, and they have met not only in Australia, but they've met right here in Washington, D.C., in May, I believe, of 2014. And when you read their material, it just sounds like these are, you know, angels sent from God. Why, it's to make the life of the ward easier, and it's to make sure everything is done the right way, and blah, 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 blah. I told you that somewhere there had to be a top group. There had to be a control somewhere, and this is it. This is where all this stuff stems from. And these people come from all over the world. They decide how they're going to work this stuff as far as how the laws are in their specific country. And then they go back and they make sure it gets implemented the way they want it. I'm going to be doing an expose on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Christian.
I believe Australia is the lab for this test, the reason why is we don't have a Bill of Rights here. We don't have a Bill of Rights. We don't have guns. We don't have anything here. We've been stripped of everything. So we are pretty much powerless in that regard. I'm not saying, I'm not advocating a gun issue here, but what I'm actually saying is we're powerless. Legally, physically, we are a powerless society. And I believe that from a lab perspective, a guardianship perspective, we are a great testing, you know, a testing sample. So what they've done is they've pretty much inflicted the worst of the laws here to see how effective they are in controlling the population. Now, a lot of what concerns me is reading the notes in these World Guardianship Congress meetings, and a lot of these a lot of the attendees are tribunal members, public guardians, and trustees.
Yes.
These three are interconnected. And people need to realise they sit on these committees, these royal commissions that we're having. They're sitting on these, you know, they're the ones that look at the submissions and decide whether these submissions are garnish publicity or not. And they control the information flow. So whilst they're sitting as a member of the tribunal, they're also sitting on these committees passing these laws. It's a very much a global network. And in Australia, they have been successful in suppressing that information, but no longer. We are starting to speak out, and people need to start talking about their stories and what is happening, because once it is fully implemented, this is transitional. It will apply in all countries. We believe it started off in the USA in the 80s. However, the public in America, God bless them, are stronger and more vocal, and they know their rights and they speak up. And in Australia, a lot of the immigrants that have arrived or live in Australia are from the war. They've seen horrible, horrible atrocities, far more timid people, and they've been able to get away with it here, and that's how they've been doing it. And the laws are structurally designed to allow this abuse. You're silent. So the trigger happens, you're in the system, and then no matter what happens, and we've seen some horrible situations and cases we've read, you're silenced, you're gagged. And if you speak up, and like Louise said, we're both expecting a knock on the door. We're both expecting someone to arrest us for speaking out on what we have witnessed.
You never let
it reminds me of Berlin. It reminds me of pre-war. It's you know, the war. We're being silenced, and our loved ones are being taken from us. They're using the symptoms of dementia and illnesses to justify that takeover, or they're using the word undue influence. And the two areas we must keep in mind: supportive decision making. This allows for more conflict in the family until they grab the person. And elder abuse. They're ramping up elder abuse talks here. They're not saying that, you know, one rat bag will give it, you know, Pop can go over to the other family member. No, what they're saying is, we find one member of your family, and we're ripping up those powers of attorney, and we're ripping up those wills, and we're taking over, and we are going to eat everything in front of you, and we're going to smile as well whilst we're doing it. And this is the type of sociopathy that we've seen. I saw them smile at me as I lost my loved one, and my sister lost our loved one in front of us, and they smiled at us, Marty. They smiled like, look at us. But it's not over, Marty. This is just the start. This is the start of a campaign.
Chris, what about their Rock the Boat conference in Queensland?
Oh, yeah, they have a Rock the Boat conference. Yes, there's a Rock the Boat conference. You tell them, Louise. The rock stars.
That's it. the rock stars.
They have a conference.
And silk and lies and government officials, all of a sudden, guardians, trustees, all coming out together to
rock the boat.
Rock the boat of aged care. I'm sorry, I can't even say it with a straight face. I just can't believe it. It's just so inappropriate, and it's just so disheartening to so many families.
And we can't attend.
Yes, we can't attend
that rock the boat. No,
you wouldn't want to be with those sick people anyway. Girls, we're down to about 4 minutes here.
Well, I've got a couple of things to finish up with, Marty, if that's all right.
Do what?
Just a small little thing to finish up our
yes
our chat and everything.
Okay.
All right. So, I guess for us, we will continue to fight on. We'll fight on with the help of Asghar, with social media, your radio program, and all the disputes that are currently our will and the estate dispute is huge. I mean, our long lost relative continues to diminish the estate. His intentions are clear, that he said that we'll both end up with nothing. So that current battle with public trustees sitting there on the sideline, filthy lawyers playing games. I mean, the Gold Coast police and the false charges, they're menaced and harassed, mum's 2 Twitter posts, and it's just, it's ridiculous. So it's why mum started on Twitter, how it all began on Twitter, and why we will never give up. It's our ongoing fight for justice is exhausting. It's financially crippling. It's humiliating. I mean, my mother is out on bail over an undertaking for 2 Twitter posts. Twitter, of all things. I've lost 4 years of my early 20s, 4 years that I can never get back. I mean, 4 years later, we're still litigating, campaigning for justice and to defend ourselves. And nothing will bring my grandparents back at this stage. But mum and I made a pact that we are in this together. We'll bring media attention to these criminal issues in Australia involving social workers, guardians, trustees and Queensland police. We're going to keep going until the Australian politicians realise that we have an ageing population whom will vote, and these political representatives will be held accountable for their actions. This is never going to end. Sadly, Queensland has the highest volume of elder abuse cases perpetrated by social workers, guardians and trustees. Police retribution is shocking and continuing without being investigated. The social worker that for my grandparents continues to sign over elderly victims in hospital with urgent interim orders to tribunal hearings, and you're just hearing about these cases constantly. I guess we've had a small overview of my story. There's so many details and there's so many loopholes and so many different things that have happened over the past couple of years. It's become a full-time job. It's 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Something is always changing. Something is constantly forming. Our story, my family, and how I lost my grandparents. So thank you, I guess. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share this with you and the audience. And
thank you.
A massive thank you to America.
Yeah, well, we'll be doing more with y'all. So this is only the second installment with the Australians. We're going to be doing far more stories on this. Chris, thank you for calling in this evening. I want to remind everyone of the Whistleblower Summit taking place in Washington, D.C., July 29th, 30th, and 31st. The public is cordially invited. Chris, I hope to see you there.
Yes.
Please come if you can. We need all the boots on the ground we can get, because this is really going to be a standoff year for us. So please, everyone, if you can make it to the summit, please do. With that in mind, again, thank you to my guests, Louise and Chris, for calling in and adding to the conversation. We will be back next Monday night with another installment from Australia. And for everybody that tuned in, and there were a gang of you, I see, thank you so much, and we'll be back next Monday night. Good night, everyone.
Thanks so much, Marty.
Thank you.